Tabii biz kompüter. Yaz
Evet.
kırmızı. Et la caméra, tu l'as, on disait un peu plus haut, c'est ça? Donc, bienvenue à tous pour ce premier Café Club de l'année scolaire. Est-ce que tout le monde m'entend en ligne?
Oui, je t'entends bien.
Super.
Ouais.
Alors aujourd'hui, on accueille Rémi Poscas qui a fait ses études à Paris, à l'école, à l'ENS, c'est ça?
Oh non, non, au
Au Lutte? D'accord.
enfin, voilà, je suis en troisième année de thèse au Lutte avec
Ok.
Jean-Michel Aluni, en directeur de thèse.
Mmh.
Et I think we should shift in English. So I am a third year PhD student at the Laboratoire Univers et Théorie, LUT, in Meudon, in the Paris Observatoire. And so we're working with my doctoral advisor, Jean-Michel Aluni, on the link we can do between cosmology, machine learning, and now also Hallowed Shape. So now, I mean, today I would like to talk about the universality of the Hallowed Shape as a strong cosmological probe. That is to say, how to use the shape of the halos to read the nonlinear power spectrum. So as an introduction, the Lambda CGM model is the concordance model with the six parameters. And one of them is that W is equal to minus one. So W is the equation of state of the dark energy. But there are other realistic dark energy models, such as the quintessence model. Yes, like the retractable dark energy dynamical model with W, which stays above minus one. And there are also some phantom models like the WCDM model, where W can go beyond minus one. And those models also exist. Those models also exist, and they are compatible with CMB and supernova data if you choose some realistic parameters. And so I will use here the 2 to the power 12 until the 1 to the power 14 solar mass dark matter halos of the dark energy universe simulations. So they are n-body simulations that were developed, I could say, 10 years ago at LUT. Very well resolved. So now my question is the following one: to choose the best cosmological model, that's to say, the cosmological model that describes the best our universe, one strategy could be to look at real galaxy groups or clusters and to compare them with what you get from those simulations. However, Hallow collapse is a highly complex nonlinear process. So the question is, do we forget the cosmology during the collapse? So the answer is no. An elegant way to see that is to look at the power spectrum. So if you look at the power spectrum, you can see that on nonlinear scale, this power spectrum is cosmological dependent. So here you have the pure nonlinear power spectrum related to the Lambda CDM one. So in red, sorry, in orange for the LPCDM, the quintessence model, and in green for WCDM model, that is to say the phantom model. And so you can see that on nonlinear scale, say 0.2 until 1 H per megaparsec, so in the orange zone, the behaviors are still very different between the fiducial cosmology and other ones. So first, the behavior is different, and even the critical K, that is to say the K where the pure non-linear power spectrum is beginning to go far away from one, when plotted in unity of the pure non-linear power spectrum of lambda CDM, even this critical K is cosmological dependent. So it is about 0.2 for the RPCDM model, and it is about 0.9 for the WCDM model. So we do not forget cosmology during the collapse, and so it is why we can expect to detect some cosmological imprints even in galaxy groups or clusters size dark matter halo. So as I said, we also work on the halo shape, and so you will see the link just after. So about the halo shape, halos are not spherical, and we know that since I would say 20 years at least. They are essentially triaxial, so there are plenty of reasons for that. So for example, there are some theoretical reasons. So it is why I quote the Roshkevich, because it is absolutely unlikely for a collapse to be spherical, I mean, from a theoretical point of view. The simulations show that, and so for example, the Jing and Suto of 2002, Algood also, and even the observations prove that dark matter halos are not spherical, they are rather triaxial. And you can see a good review about all of that in Limousin et al. Of 2013. So halos are triaxial. And now we have done this qualitative constatation. The question is how to quantify it. So to capture halo shape without spherical bias, the first step is to compute local density. So here I'm using spherical particle hydrodynamic kernel. Then you compute the shape of each isodensity contour related to the mean density of the universe. And this contour, this isodensity contour, is very close to an ellipsoid. So why I say that? So here you have on the left, you have the example of a 3G representation of a simulated cluster. So yes, of a simulated cluster. So you see many things in that. So first, you can see the triaxial shape. You can also see the numerous peripheric substructures. I will go back to that next. And here on the right, you have this halo when it is projected and two dimension. So it is just projected for the visualization. Yes, in my process, I do not need projection. And when I take the all the particles which have a density which is equal to 200 times the mean density of the universe, so the in blue, I can fit that with an ellipsoid. So this is the blue ellipsoid. I'm also doing that for the 2000 times the mean density of the universe particles. So in orange and in green, the same thing, 10 times higher. So now everyone agree that we have triaxial shape and that we can find cosmology. It is the time to compare the cosmic field you get in a dark energy simulation, dark energy universe simulation, to compare from one cosmology to another. So the first constatation is that everything almost superposed. So you see that because you have an almost identical spatial distribution, every attempt to find cosmological imprint in the in the shape of halos should be considered as a weak signal detection problem. So we have a tool for weak signal detection, and this is machine learning. So if we use mass and triaxial shape profiles as attributes, and it's very important, if we remove any spurious, what I call clever ends, any spurious effects, so gradient boosting trees can recognize between lambda CDM halos and RPCDM halos with a very satisfying rate. Here it is 74%. I have some slides about machine learning. So I know that here at LAM, there are some people that are interested in that. So if you want, I can go back to this point after the reglementary 20 minutes, if you want, and I would be very glad to discuss all of that. But our task today will be to explain why does that work? Why we can recognize cosmology just by analyzing shape, and to what extent we can do that. So I will just concentrate myself not on all the profile, but just the 200 ellipsoidal shell, hyper contour. And I will compute and diagonalize the inertia tensor. So that those are the 2 points correlations in the three directions. And when I diagonalize that, I get three eigenvalues from which I derive the semi-axis length of the best fitting ellipsoid. So what I call ABC. And those ABC, I can convert them to some usual indicators. So first, the ellipticity, what I call E, the prolaticity, if it is more oblate or more prolat halos, and I add also the triaxiality. So I took that from Frank et al. Of 1991. So the triaxiality is zero for a punctate, that is to say when A is equal to B, and it is one for a filament, that is to say when B is equal to C. And if now I plot the median T in each mass bin, so here I have numerous mass bin in our mass domain of interest. And if I plot the median triaxiality versus the log of the mass of the halos, I get three very different curves. If I consider RPCDM, lambda CDM, or WCDM cosmology. So it is a very striking result. So I see, the first thing we see is that, the RPCDM curve in orange is much higher than the other curves. And we can explain that because it says that the RPCDM halos are more, I would say, elliptical or less spherical than the lambda CDM halos. And why? Because the sigma 8 of the RPCDM model is much lower than the sigma 8 of lambda CDM or WCDM. So if the sigma 8 is much lower, you need more time to clusterize. To form clusters, and so the halos you see at present time at z equals zero, like in this picture, the present day halos are much younger in the RPCDM universe than in the fiducial one. And so, because they are younger, they are less spherical. Why? Because virilization tends to sphericalize halos. So, because the halos of RPCDM are younger, they are more spherical. So it explains the hierarchy between the three cosmology in this plot. So this is not a discovery, because we already knew that in Despoli et al. Of 2014, and also in Bonamigo, which was here at LAM et al. In 2015. So they haven't observed that for tractility, but they have observed that for electricity and porosity. And they have not studied the behavior between different cosmologies, but in the fiducial cosmology at different Z. So, but and we are with, I mean, if it works at for different cosmologies at Z is equal to zero, it should work in number CDM at different Z. For obvious reasons. So, so the obvious reasons are that the when you change cosmology, you change the formation history of halos. So, to understand this cosmological dependence, which is our task today, the best way is to absorb this cosmological dependence. That is to say, to find a cosmological dependent function, what I call here FC, variable change. So that the TFCM, I mean the equivalent of those curves, but in the FCMT plan, should be cosmological independent. To say we try to find a variable change of M so that the curves superpose. Okay, so the first step is the proposition of Despoli in 2014. And you introduce the linear root mean square density field. So what is that? You have the linear power spectrum. So this is the initial power spectrum that you propagate to Z equals zero in a linear way. And you smooth it with, say, a Gaussian window function of characteristic scale R. And so from that, you get what we call the linear RMS density field, that is sigma R. And this sigma R, you can convert that to sigma M using the mean density of the universe. If you do that, you can also introduce the peak height, so which is an innovation of BBKS, the famous BBKS. And so the peak height is delta C over sigma. So what is delta C? Delta C, it's the critical over density. So you can see that as a very weakly dependent function. A function that depends in a very weak way on the cosmology and on omega M. So it can be seen as the omega m to the power o dot o o 55. So it's very, very weak. And so for our cosmologies, delta C is between 1.675, so it's almost the same thing. So now Despoli says plot the TM plot, I mean the TM curves in the plan of T mu. And very surprisingly, the curves are much closer comparing to what they were in the TM plan. So show you again the aspect in TM and the aspect in TMU. Okay, so Despoli says that here we have what we could see as the kind of universality. and maybe a cosmological, and maybe we can use it as a cosmological proof. But we say that we can go much further. How? So instead of considering the linear RMS, consider rather the nonlinear RMS. So what is the nonlinear RMS? This is the same thing, but I do not use the linear power spectrum, but the nonlinear power spectrum. So say I am in z is equal to zero, and I measure the particle power spectrum using a power grid CIC. And you have also the corresponding nonlinear peak height, new tide. And in new tide T space, this is a surprise, the curves superpose almost completely. So here the questions between FECDM and lambda CDM or WCDM and lambda CDM are 10 times slower than what they were in the new T space. And so here we can say that we have universality. A very interesting point is that this result holds not only for the median curves, what we have done, that is to say in each mass or new or time new beam, we take only the median T. We can also do that for all the for the whole of the T distribution, which is to say, if you fix new tilde, so if you fix new tilde, for fixed new tilde, all the T distribution is cosmological independent. So I could have done the same curves for the eighth decile, and it would be also cosmological independent in the new tilde T space. Except for the most extreme value, I don't know, the first decile or the last one, something like that. But for the vast of the T distribution, it is cosmological independent in each new tide beam. So, in other words, we have showed that all the cosmological content of cluster shape is embedded, is encapsulated in the nonlinear power spectrum. That is to say, when you measure some triaxial indicators on our galaxy groups or galaxy clusters, what you are doing is that you are measuring the nonlinear power spectrum and no more than that. So it is not very surprising, because as I say, to get the triaxial shape, I am doing like a PCA, principal component analysis, or in other words, I'm computing the inertia tensor, and the inertia tensor is composed by the 2 points correlations in a real space. And the power spectrum is the 2 points correlations in Fourier space. So it's not very surprising that I get that I can embed all the cosmological information which is encapsulated in the shape, mass shape curve, that I can embed that in the nonlinear power spectrum. So if we get all together, it means that we have a brand new procedure to measure the nonlinear power spectrum. So in three states, in three steps. So I measure the empty curves in our universe, really, I mean, as an observer. Then I know the universal new tilde T relation. I know that from the simulations in all the cosmology, the realistic cosmologies. And so I can deduce the new tide M function of our universe. And when I have this function, the new tide M function of our universe, I can, through a Laplace transform, directly infer the power spectrum, the nonlinear power spectrum. So here, you have on the left, in dashed curves, the theoretical, the CIC mu pi m curve, and in continuous time you have the reconstructed one with our method. So here it is using t, using the directivity parameter, and you see that it is, I mean, in each couple of curves, the curves are very close one to each other. So this is a very satisfying reconstruction. And as I say, when you have the new tilde of M curve, you can directly reconstruct the power spectrum. And this is what we have done on the right. So you see that I can have an estimation not only on the amplitude of the power spectrum, but also on his slope. And those quantities are very hard to get from simple computations. Why? Because essentially the nonlinear collapse breaks the power spectrum on the nonlinear scale. And since you have a break, it is very how to say. Since you have a breaking point, it is very difficult to go over the breaking point just by doing a limited expansion, Taylor expansion, because it is not differentiable around the breaking point. So what I've done here with the traction parameter, I could also do that with the plasticity parameter p. So here you see the, you know, the triple figure. So p versus m versus mu versus nu tilde, and you see that I get closer curves in a nu and true universality with nu tilde. And on the bottom you have the reconstructed nu tilde of m with p measures. I mean, the measures in the simulation. And I have also done that with the sphericity, so B over A. So the median eigenvalue, the median axis over the larger one. And so I have also universality in nu tilde and also a satisfying reconstruction. So you could ask for which geometrical quantities that does not work. Actually, that does not work with quantities that imply that gives too heavy weight to C, because C, the tiniest axis, is very hard to get because you are on isodensity. And so, because C is the tiniest, the littlest axis, it is the axis with the list of particles. And so, it is very hard to have a procedure of fractional measure that is able to get this C correctly. So. In T and P, you have C, but I mean, its weight is compensated by the presence of B, so it's fine. But if I would have tried to plot, I mean, equivalent figures with C over A or the ellipticity, it wouldn't be as satisfying. Another question is, what about two-dimensional considerations? So the question is simple. I mean, when you observe, you do not observe in three dimensions. So your halo is a splash, is a spot, and your telescope, simply. So you have a two-dimensional projection. So what I've done here is that I have taken all the halos. I have projected them on the, say, XY plan. And on the splash, on the spot, I am trying to look at the eigenvalues of the inertia tensor. So there is no isodensity considerations anymore. And so it works. So here you have t, I mean, the equivalence of t in two dimensions. So it is 1 minus b over a squared. So this is the squared of the eccentricity for those who love Newtonian mechanics. And when you have that, you see that you can also observe universality. And since you have universality in new tilde, you can, from the measure in M space, you can reconstruct the new tilde of M curve, and so the power spectrum. So as a conclusion, I would say that from an hello by hello point of view, mass and shape profiles associated with an artificial intelligence can detect cosmological signatures. So it was in my introduction, and it is the point I would be glad to discuss if you wish. But you have to understand your machine learning dispositive to avoid any spurious effect. And so you have to pave the way with much physical knowledge. And it works because, from a statistical point of view, how the shape indeed carries cosmological information. One can read in how the shape the nonlinear power spectrum, which is highly cosmologically impregnated. So thank you for your attention.
May I ask a question? Just to I speak loudly for the speaker, for the Michael. So to resume, the idea concerning the reconstruction of the power spectrum starting from the triaxiality, the idea is that for every halo, you measure the tensor of inertia, then you extract either the ellipticity or the prolapness or the triaxiality. And then halo by halo, you reconstruct the nonlinear power spectrum in the on the scales allowed by your mass, and then you average over all the power spectra of each halo. So for each halo,
so
you compute the power
it
spectrum.
Is not, so it is not for each halo. For each halo, I compute the prolapness and the triaxiality. And so in each mass beam, I take the median t or the or the eighth decile t.
To recover the power spectrum for the median or the
Exactly.
Okay.
But I would say that you can combine, and you can combine, and you have a first estimation with median curves, and another estimation with the f decile curves, and so on.
Okay. Thank you.
In the same way, more or less. Do you have an idea of the size of the dispersion of this distribution of p for each mass beam? I'm curious whether the dispersion is big enough to include the other curves.
So it's very interesting. It is a very interesting question. So it is, I mean, the dispersion is high. It's very high. So the triaxiality is between 0 and 1, and basically you have halos at almost 0 and at almost 1 in each cosmology. However, I mean, your question is very important because you could ask, why do you say that in the new space, when I say that there is no real universality in the new space, how do I know? Maybe everything is in the L bars. Yes. So there are many ways to understand, to answer this question. So the first one is, I mean, the Katharina's one. Well, that is to say, you have here the hierarchy. So if it was just a Gaussian, I mean, a Poisson fluctuation, you should not conserve the hierarchy between Rp, lambda, and W. So there is a signal first. And second, the second way to answer that is to take the proposition seriously. So what I've done is to take a mean curve between the dot 3-1. And from this mean curve, I say, okay, this mean curve is the universal T mu relation. I mean, the so-called universal T mu relation. And from this universal Tini relation, I try to reconstruct the nu of M, not the nu tilde, but the nu, the linear nu of M curve. And it doesn't work at all. So those are not, there is not here a sort of universality which is hidden by the L bars or something like that. This is not universal because you cannot, because if it was universal, you should be able to reconstruct new of M from that, and you cannot.
So in that case, you say this is independent of when you calculate T. So for example, there is this paper from Russell Stamp where you have the extra time of pulling surveillance, but not surveillance, calculated with full omeroids or full ellipsoids and something like this. And it shows that it's important to consider how you calculate the agility. This is going to change. But even if you change the, have you tried changing the method?
Okay, another very important question. So your question is, when I change my method of subtractor extraction, I've not talked about, and also after that, inertia tensor construction and so on and so forth, do my results change? So I would say that the only parameter I have varied is the parameter of eta. So what is eta? It is a parameter I'm using to measure, to detect substructures. So Jing and Suto are using another kind of friend. I'm not doing so because I have not, I do not have 1 million particle halo. So I am just comparing the mean over density, the spherically mean over density to the local density. And so if you have a substructure, you have a peck. And so I say, what is a peck? It is when the local density is eta times higher than the mean spherical over density. And so this peak is a substructure. So I have tried to vary this eta, and the results survive.
Well, I think you're basically removing the dense particles inside this positive substructure.
Yeah.
You're making a hole.
Yes. So I would say that I do not have any topological consideration in this work. Mm. So there is no problem of making holes first. Secondly, yes, because also, as Emmanuel Negri said to me yesterday, even if when you consider you have at most 10% of the halo, which is the substructure, which is contained in the substructure, so you do not really change the shape of the halo by
the shape.
It is a very, very important part and a very interesting part, but I'm just interested in the overall shape of the halo. Mm-hmm. So it does not change the overall shape of the halo. And the hammer argument is that when I am doing the two-dimensional projection, I do not have any kind of substructure constellations or something like that on the floor. So it is a hammer argument.
You have more questions? Eric, can you ask a question?
Yes. Thank you for the talk. So I was wondering, what is the precision you have on the 2D measurement in the end, at the end of the representation? You show the curves, you show it's very close, but how much it in quantity, percent, or?
So I would be glad to answer if the computer agrees to answer. Okay, thank you. Okay, so it is here. Yes, and you ask. Okay, so if I consider the slope and the amplitude of the curves, of the new tide curves, it's good up to 5%, and even 10%, I think, for epsilon.
So you read that from the curve, or you have this number computed?
So I have computed those numbers. Obviously, from the curves, I cannot say. But I have, because mu tilde of m is a power law, I have just done, linear regression on the curves, on the theoretical curves, and on the one I get by reconstruction. And so I have compared the slope and the amplitude.
Okay, so five, how much did you say? 5-10%?
Between 5 to 10, yes. Okay. But I mean, in the paper we are writing with Jean-Michel, everything will be, measured very...
Okay, thank you.
Yes. This one?
So red is one left to the end. And it looks like green part of looks like green and blue are both less concentrated than convexity. Something we would expect. We would expect that the more negative dark energy question of space would give rise to less concentrated.
Look. I am not varying between, they have not varied between the three cosmologies, only the W. Why? Because they wanted to have compatible, parameters that are compatible with the CMB and the supernova. So here, in retractables, for instance, so Shugra, I've not talked about, but Shugra CDM is another kind of dynamical dark energy model. I have not talked about, when they take, for example, a dynamical dark energy in retractables, they also have to lower sigma 8, and also they have to lower omega n. So there is more dark energy. There is more omega lambda. Yes, exactly. So this is why the concentration. The diffusion by dark energy doesn't go in the sense you would have expected. Okay.
As the new one has the scale, you mentioned that the difference is large, like k between 1 and 10.
So,
in physical scale,
I haven't understood the question. Actually, if you can reformulate it.
That are a scale of two.
Yeah.
And you want to see this large effect that you see on the very small scale. And is the scale this scale between 1 and 10? Is it the scale of the cluster, or is it smaller?
It is the scale of the galaxy groups. So we have galaxy groups between O dot 8 megaparsec to 1.3 megaparsec. Okay. So if you want to take the corresponding power spectrum, you just inverse it. So it is between 1/1.2 to 1/0.8. So you should have something between 0.2 until 0.8. So it is the orange region. So it is the region I probed with galaxy groups. It is a region where we know that baryonic effects are not very important. If I go in very, very little structures, like, galaxies, or here, if I go to 3 H per megaparsec or something like that, it is not something I've probed. And second, if you add agent feedback, for instance, you should get a very you could get very different power, dark matter power spectrum. So it is a okay. So I disagree. So in the scale of galaxy groups, you have very contradictory studies. So I have a paper of the PC in 2019, which is a good review of the subject. So there is so I don't think this is the first author, but okay. So you have very different considerations, assuming different models of agent feedback. And so for example, they decide to say that there is no there is no effect more than a percent in process case. So first. Secondly, even if you say that there is a difference in the power spectrum, in the dark matter power spectrum, due to the feedbacks, due to, I would say, a subgrid effect, it should also change the shape of the halos. And so if you do not believe me, ask Arturo, who have shown to me, I don't know if it is published yet, but for example, soon, okay. But he has shown to me some results in concerning fractality. And you see that if you have an AGN feedback model that changes the power spectrum, it also changes the shape of dark matter halos. And as I say, it is more a confirmation of a result than something else. Why? Because what I say is that you can read the power spectrum in the shape of the halo. So if for one region or another, you change the power spectrum, you should also change it should also change the shape you measure. So, I mean, the point I show is the universality between new tilde and the shape. And the fact that when you change the power spectrum, it also changes the shape. I mean, it is a good point for us. I mean, you're convinced or?
Not at all.
Okay.
I'm sorry, maybe you want to also comment why you concentrate on the mass ranges between 10 to the 13, 10 to the 14 solar masses, which is actually the reason why you didn't fully, if I correctly understood the triaxiality and all the mechanism of the recipe in the largest mode where you see larger deviation, and the equation is a matter of resolution, spatial and mass resolution. It didn't allow you to do the same exercise and more apart from the reality configuration. Is it correct?
Absolutely. As usual.
Okay. Yeah, no question.
Is there any question online?
Renan,
please.
Yes, thank you. I didn't understand the observational strategy because, as I understood, you would like to measure the shapes of clusters, galaxy clusters, and therefore measure this relation between T and nu, and infer the power spectrum. But the power spectrum that you will infer is not the matter power spectrum, but rather the galaxy power spectrum. Or you have several terms, like a Bayes expansion with several Bayes parameters. And how to deal with that? Is that right? Or I missed something about
that? So the question is, when I measure in my universe, the T nu relation, I do not measure the T nu using the dark matter nu, but the galaxy nu. And so I will answer that in my universe, I mean, in the universe I observe, I do not measure T nu relation. The only thing I am measuring in my universe is the TM relation. Yes, and the universal T mutile relation, I know that it is universal, and I know this universal relation just using simulation in different cosmologies. Okay, so in my universe, I am just measuring Tm. So M is the mass of the dark matter halo, and T should be the tractility of dark matter halo. So the question is, how much can I access the shape of the dark matter halo if the only thing I see is the galaxy, the variant, the galaxy. So a good way to answer to that is to throw the word, I mean, wet cleansing, and let the observers, get what they can get from that. I mean, it's an observation. I mean, that consideration on the observation strategy is not the essence of my results. I mean, I am more concentrated to understand the dynamics of the collapse.
In other words, you have to have like a connection between the weak lensing signal due to those clusters and the 3D distribution of galaxies.
Okay, yes, exactly. So the 3D or the 2D, because as I showed, it also works in 2D when you project. So also in 2D, it would be fine. But yes, I mean, essentially, I cannot see the dark matter halo. So I am thought to have, you know, like gravitational probes, but not, I mean, the only way I know for that is lensing. But maybe there are other, I would be glad to learn on the subject.
Okay, great, thank you.
Is there a last question online? I guess we can thank Jeremy for his presentation.
Next week's seminar should be in hybrid mode, like this way. The speaker will be Guillaume Allaire and Mathilde Josac. We talk about the precision modeling of the JWST first cluster lenses Max J0723.37327. Nothing less. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.